Yes, hello everyone and welcome to the Dribble Podcast. My name is Craig O'Donoghue from the West Australian newspaper, and throughout this summer I'm bringing you all the news and interviews, everything to do with basketball in WA. There's plenty going on at the moment, and this week we'll speak with Sports Entertainment Group CEO Craig Hutchison about everything that's happening on and off the court at the Perth Wildcats. Plus we'll head to the US and speak to WA's Rosie Deegan as a decision nears for her to choose between basketball and AFLW. Well, there's plenty going on with the Perth Wildcats on and off the court. It's been a successful season for them so far as they head towards the finals. But the best thing to do right now is to talk to the man who's in charge of the club. The Sports Entertainment Group are the owners of the Perth Wildcats. Craig Hutchison is the CEO of that group, and he joins us on the Dribble Podcast. Craig, welcome to the Dribble Podcast.
Great to be with you, Craig. On what's a historic week for the Perth Wildcats with the Damian Martin event, and looking forward to the back end of the season.
There's too many Craigs. Well, the broth a little bit with this one, but today is Thursday, February 1, from a recording perspective. We normally record on a Tuesday, but Hutchie's got a bit going on. He might not be in the country next week at this stage still. So to give you some context about when we are doing this, it's 3 p.m. on Thursday, Feb 1. And only a couple of hours ago, news did break that you guys have sold a $1.5 million section of the SEN Teams company to some other people. Take us through that decision.
Yeah, look, it's a little premature to talk in any detail about it. We'll have more to say about it in our half-year report at the end of the month. So that's a more appropriate time to shed some light and some colour on it, other than to say that our SEN Teams business, which has five teams within it, the Perth Wildcats, the Bendigo Spirit, the Otago Nuggets, which of course we have many Wildcats playing and coaching within that team environment, the Southern Hoyo, and more recently the Melbourne Mavericks netball. SEN Teams is being set up as a subsidiary of our publicly listed sports entertainment group, or will act as a subsidiary. And yeah, we've been open that we've been, open to the possibility of a minor shareholding group joining us in that journey. We think there's incredible value in the SEN Teams world that we are building, and that can continue to be reinvested in the respective clubs. And so we've been working through that process, and we've given guidance previously that we're open to that. There's a little bit of work going on that at the moment. We'll have more to say about that at the end of the month.
There are documents available. Sean Smith from our business team have handed me these ones from the ASX, which indicate that there's three people involved. Their names are on those documents, and it works out to about 3.75% of the company, which would value you guys at about $40 million. Would that be an accurate assessment from your numbers?
Yeah, I think we'll give more detail on that towards the end of the month, mindful that we're going into a half-year period of reporting. It'd be more appropriate to disclose more detail around that towards the end of the financial reporting period, which will be during the month of February.
But the fact that names are there, I can see the names there. I'm not going to name them unless you're prepared to name them at the moment, because it's a bit of an awkward situation from a business standpoint, but people can read them. Why aren't you prepared to reveal who these people are?
Yeah, I think we're a publicly listed company, so there's a small process going on. We're really excited about it. We think it's going to be fantastic for our SEN Teams business and for the Wildcats in particular. I should note it's an element of the SEN Teams collective as opposed to the single entity of the of Perth Wildcats. And yeah, it's part of our strategy to unlock further value for our shareholders, and we'll have more to say about that during the month of February and in more detail.
So is the club up for sale? It says SEG is seeking to raise further funds for a share in its sporting team's business, unlocking the strategic value created through its ownership of four professional basketball teams and one professional netball team. So it's five teams, but the Wildcats are what we care about over here.
I can answer that with a bit more clarity. No, SEN Teams is not for sale. Not at all. Not even in the slightest. We've been building that business, that arm of the business. We've been investing in more teams. We're excited about netball coming on board, and we're off to a fantastic start, as you may have seen by many of the announcements we've made on various partners and sponsors. We're really excited about where Perth Wildcats is heading and where we've got to. There's an opportunity to, like some of the other sporting teams have done around the NBL, and in joining and having some other like-minded investors who share that vision and share that journey in a minor perspective, but we will maintain our majority ownership in all teams, and look forward to building that in the years to come with some aligned investors, just like we've done in our broader sports entertainment group business.
So at the moment, it's 3.75%. Majority for you guys could be 51%. And what percentage are you keen to retain and what percentage are you keen to move on?
Yeah, I think we've been open-minded. We've been clear with the ad market and with the shareholder market, more importantly, that we've seen it as one of the areas where we may look to unlock some value for not only ourselves, but for investors coming in who want to capitalise on not only the booming interest in sports teams around the world, the fact that we're probably a little bit rare and that we have a volume number of them across multiple sports now, that we come with a strong commercial arm to the business that can support and underpin from a sales and advertising and sponsorship and hospitality that we hopefully bring the house in running teams. So we've been keen to unlock and share a little bit of that value with like-minded people. And that process has been ongoing. And I don't, without getting too much into the weeds, it's not, we're not looking for a significant number or a significant amount, but we remain open-minded about where there's some strategic fits, and we're in a couple of conversations, and we'll inform the market more thoroughly towards the end of February.
Just one last one on this before we move on to the actual basketball side of things. How does it affect the Wildcats day to day?
It doesn't at all. Business as usual. It does not affect the team in one bit, other than it should give everyone great comfort and heart that there's an unbelievable future for all of our teams, and the Wildcats are the cornerstone of the SEN team's business. And I think hopefully, as the Wildcat family and the Red Army have seen, we've invested strongly in the team. We've invested strongly in the people, players, coaches. That's only going to continue and to enhance. And I think this this dialogue is ongoing.
So when we booked you in to come on this podcast, this all hadn't broken. We were going to talk about Damo and we were going to talk about the team itself. So as of the most recent game, you have qualified for finals, which is great given the history of the club and given what an emotional wreck you were on the last day of the season last year as you watched one game on TV and then stood around hoping that you made it on percentage. How much more of a relief is it to know that you're in now and can look to try to lock away a top two spot and then chase top spot?
Well, firstly, are we actually in? Like, I note and saw the NBL announcement on that, but like in our mind, we've got one more win to go before we can secure a top two berth at minimum. And so, for me, it would be nice. Like, it's finals is, I guess, top six, but it'd be nice to solidify top four. And by my recollection, you may have more clarity than me. One more would be nice. A few more would be even better. So there's clearly an opportunity there to finish second, which we hope to do. And, first place is not out of the question, which would be just wonderful. But then the work starts again, doesn't it? And I think, as we've seen last week with the Illawarra game, you can be a couple of percent off at any given time and come unstuck really, really quickly. This is not a time of the season where you can get ahead of yourself or get too caught up in what's been the last 12, 13 or 14 weeks. I think the coach has spoken brilliantly around the attitude of a game at a time and head down and not losing focus and getting the job done. To answer your question, though, more specifically, yeah, we always believed in the team. We always believed in our people, and we were always full steam ahead on supporting them. So, while externally there may have been a fair bit of noise and question marks and two and five and reasonably so in a club where we all expect so much of it, internally we always had great faith and, yeah, we've been really well led. And I want to just acknowledge, again, with without putting the cart before the horse, but whatever happens from here is ahead of us. But the work that Danny Mills has done and John Riley have done, and along the way they've had their, like all of us, have had their share of feedback from sections of the media and beyond, but they've done a great job. Danny's done a fantastic job of leading this basketball program, working with ownership on the type of team that he wanted to build, working on with John on the type of team. And I think, what you're seeing is great people who really care, who are all in. And they've been a delight to work with, this group. And, we're hopeful that they can frank that with some success for us all during the finals. It'd be beautiful. I think the road trip through Christmas was a huge challenge, but in one way it brought us all together. Christmas in Melbourne together, some time on the road, families. We're really pleased with how it's gone, but I'm really mindful that we haven't achieved anything yet. It's a long way to go.
So I definitely have you in from when the NBL announced that I had the same maths that you were in the six. You've still got more to do to get top two.
Yeah, I mean, Tassie won all four and we lose all four.
I think it's not enough teams. Not enough teams that can get to your 16. Yeah. That's the way I saw it on the ladder. So you're in there. But so earlier in the year when it wasn't going well and it was looking like it was just chaos everywhere, you backed John Riley in and you were adamant at the time. We re-signed him the previous year to give him the extra season and you were really confident. What did you see in him as a human and as a coach that made you think that this was going to happen?
He's a man of high character. He's a good person. He lives and breathes basketball. He's got a great feel for the game. Our players love him. He'd be reconnected to the group. And he's got self-belief. He's self-assured without being overconfident, I think is how I would describe him. And his family are great people as well. So, as owners, we've been blessed to work with John. As we were with Scott before him, as new owners, we've had two coaches that we love working with. John's put his stamp on this team. He's worked incredibly collaboratively with them. I think our assistant coaching group have done a great job too, and I want to give a shout out to the three of them and the way they've worked. Losing Mike Kelly was obviously tough given his experience, but to have had Jared and Keegan and Aaron step up the way they have and the way that they've supported John and the playing group, and this is a great chemistry. I think the recent analogy that Ty and Keanu and others have mentioned about the band is true, but not all bands have a great night every night, right? So we've got to make sure that we minimalize maximize the big stage and the size of the show. And as we've seen, on any given night, like this season is so even, as you've covered extensively through the course of the year. There's some teams outside the six that could cause real damage if they got in. And even the Phoenix, who were 10th at full strength, would cause, they beat us by 20 or 30 points in early in the year. So there's no such thing as a lighter game or a gimme. Your mental attitude to be there. It's been great to watch our team go about it. And we just feel confident that this team believes in themselves and will fight. And the deeper the season goes, I think the more that'll kick in. But the other teams would say that too. Melbourne and Tassie and others are all good fighters. So it's exciting what's ahead, though. That's for sure.
You were bullish at the start of the year about this team's chances when we chatted at the season launch. You were like, we've put a lot of money and we've invested in it. We've got the right sort of pieces. You always felt that this was the most likely scenario, wasn't it, that you would be in the mix at this time of year?
I think it's we knew it would take time to gel. You can't put talent together. This is a very different team to last year, and it's been really the first team that Danny has been able to fully influence as legacy contracts expire and as people morph into other opportunities. To see the youth, to see the youth on the floor at the end of the Friday night game the week before last, and to see the Ben Henschel bucket and Aquera having an impact and Dante hitting a bucket on the buzzer and the excitement of the players on the sidelines. They're the types of things that have been, we've been able to bring youth in. We've been, obviously, Alex is a gift, and that's been a treat to work with, but there's a great mix of youth. The mid-tier is a bit, the Ty Webster age group is a bit better represented in Keanu, and then you've got the Jessies of the world having their best year in shooting percentage. So we feel that blend's good, but the quality of human beings in the building is first rate, on and off the floor. And can't be underestimated in just the culture and the fabric of the business and the place at the moment has really come a long way, and we continue to work on it, but we're excited at the possibilities in the finals, but we're mindful of the obstacles and the challenges ahead.
The Alex Saar story is amazing for the club. Every time we go to training, there's someone different there, and you look and go, who's that? Which club's he from? And then you go to the games and there's more people.
Yeah.
They're just everywhere, NBA scouts and GMs all over the place. What's it done for the brand and for the belief that this is a club you want to come to if you're a kid, and this is a place that you can expand for now from a business perspective or from a, just a club brand to around the world?
Well, it's been amazing. You couldn't have dreamt that we could get to work with an athlete this talented and this with this much upside. I think the way he and the coaches have worked together has been first class. The way John's coached him has been terrific. I've had the fortune, along with many of our execs, to spend a lot of time with his parents in the last couple of weeks and a few dinners around the country. And they're wonderful people. Really enjoying Perth as a city, loving it. They've obviously got another son playing in the NBA already and divided their time supporting two sides. But they're here living in Perth and have loved their experience. And he really feeds off his teammates. He's built good friendships. They feed off him. you saw last weekend the quality of the game he played against Phoenix, and some of the blocks were just breathtaking, and some of the things he can do. You know, the scouts that have been to the games are just overwhelmingly impressed with what he can do defensively and offensively, and in many aspects. But yeah, you know, that's an exciting journey ahead for him, and whether he lands at pick 1, 2, 3 or beyond, we'll be wrapped for him, and he'll always be a Wildcat. I think he'll be the type of character that will want to come back and be part of things in the future, and we'll always want to have him around the place. It's, you know, he's committed to being a part of the back end of the season, and I think just the way he works with his teammates and yeah, the way he fits in, he's just an impressive young man. Yeah, hats off to the NBL who collaborated and were, you know, big part of the process in the Next Star program. But you know, when we saw the potential of the opportunity, we jumped at it. And you know, you look at our list, it's very settled, and you know, the you know, it's taking shape already for the future. He's the one person really that we know is not going to be with us because there's a bigger day for him. But we're excited by that, and he'll be hard to replace. But, gee, we're going to enjoy him while he's here. And I'd encourage all the public to get out, to enjoy him, to watch him play. In 5 or 10 years, maybe even 3, you're going to be able to sit next to someone at the basketball or watch a game on television in your local bar and say, you know what, I went and watched him play when he was in Perth, and he was part of hopefully something special.
You mentioned culture before. The culture will be really on show. So this Sunday, when people are listening to this, last Sunday, from a up-to-date perspective, you're retiring Damian Martin's jersey.
I don't think anyone would debate that Damian Martin's legacy is pronounced. He's got the rings to prove it. He's an incredible figure. That even still today, he's in the argument for one of the best defensive, if not the best defensive player of all time. And just the caliber of person and the leader he was. Yeah, I never was fortunate enough to work with him as a player, but I work with him as a media identity and co-hosting our run home show in Perth and throughout regional WA. And you can hear it at 6:57 a.m. at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, by the way, if you haven't before. And he's a ripper, so he deserves it. And I'm happy for him. I was really happy for Sean. I'll be there on Sunday and can't wait to watch as his jersey and singlet, is raised to where it should be.
We expect Bryce's name will be up there one day, given the amount of things that he has done, and we're getting towards late February, which means the clock's ticking on next year in February when he'll finally be eligible to be an Australian citizen. Do you know how long you're going to have to wait post February 23, 2025 before that paperwork can be done?
I was hoping we'd get through this conversation without the citizens. What I've learnt over this process, we've spent an inordinate amount of time on it. Like, if someone came in and audited our business on the time spent on this issue and trying to solve the complexities of it, you'd be aghast. You know, what I've learnt is we've done all we can absolutely physically, humanly do to support the fullness of time process. From here, we will accept what happens when it happens and how it happens, and getting into it, like the whens and why from here, probably not conducive. You're familiar with a good part of the journey to here. We'll plan for all scenarios. We'll, you know, if it happens quickly, fantastic. If it, you know, takes the time, it takes time, you know, but like the energy spent on it to this point has been the right amount of time, because it's an important issue, but it's, you know, we're going to let it play out from here.
Well, hopefully the government can figure it out then really quickly, because it's ridiculous if you have to wait 4 years to become eligible and then has to wait even longer to get back into the queue, then it would be silly.
They're your words.
Yes, they are, and my words, and I think they're everyone else's words.
They're
well
spoken.
You're a strong chance to beat the Super Bowl. Ballpark Entertainment's heading over there. You've been to many. Tell us, what's it like? And can you network when you're over there, or meet up with people over in Vegas to try to get to help the Wildcats in any way?
We've got the biggest client lists coming, that I think probably ever in the 15 years that we've been taking groups from all sorts of walks of life. So it'll be an incredible week if I'm fortunate enough to go. I'm not confirmed by any means yet. I'm hopeful but not certain of going. It's a, you know, it'll be a nice thing to do. And the fixture sort of works out not too bad. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, to be in Vegas and to see how they do it would be incredible. You do always come home with inspiration or different thoughts or thinking on how you could apply part of that to your business or your entertainment product. The entertainment product side of things, well, basketball, we're in the entertainment business. and then there's no bigger entertainment product than the Super Bowl, and you do draw inspiration from the UFC, not only at the on game day, but in the lead up to. And yeah, the whole sporting world will be there. There'll be meetings to be had, and the media hub and the business hub, and also team ownership is obviously an area where we're growing our interest in and scaling, and there'll be a lot of those worlds colliding in Vegas. So yeah, if I can get there, it'll be fantastic.
You tell a lot of stories on a lot of podcasts and on a lot of radio stations. My favourite one is you've becoming convincing people you're a staff member at Super Bowl for many, many years. Like, you've done some crazy stuff in your life.
Yeah.
Is that at number one, getting out in the field and convincing people that you actually were meant to be there?
They're in my younger, more reckless days, Craig. I've hung the boots up these days. But I've always equated the day to fun. It is a great fun day. And whether you're in a pub in the Sporting Globe in Perth, or whether you're actually at the venue, or whether you're hustling out of the ground by hiding under the stairs to carry the stage out like some reckless kid did a few years back. It is a great occasion, great experience, and it is a day of celebration for sport. It is the ultimate in sport, my favourite day of the year. And, yeah, we've got an incredible two teams, haven't we? So looking forward to it. And wherever I am, I'll either be in Melbourne or I'll be in Vegas, so we'll see.
All Perth barracking for Mitch Wishnowsky at the 49ers, obviously played over here, played waffle footy over here in the, I think it was Rezzies or Colts. He never got to league footy, but hopefully he can have a win after losing in 2020. Now, while getting out into the Super Bowl field is impressive, what I think isn't impressive is probably your second favourite day of the year, which is WrestleMania. You're a big wrestling fan, and the WWE Elimination Chamber is coming to Perth in a few weeks' time, and you've managed to double book yourself and have Wildcats MVP ball on the same night. It's normally at Crown. This time it's at the Convention Centre, so you can't even duck out and walk down to Optus. What were you thinking?
It's extraordinary, isn't it? I feel a bit like CM Punk. I was so close and yet so far away from being able to make it to Perth. This Elimination Chamber in Perth will be unbelievable. The biggest ticket in town that night is the Wildcats Ball, and hopefully you're all coming. For those that aren't fortunate enough to make it to the Wildcats Ball, the next best thing will be Elimination Chamber. It'll be incredible. I've been doing the time mathematics, and I think the event starts circa 5:30, whereas the ball is sort of 6:30 onwards. So that feels like opening match or opening two matches sort of possibility in a tuxedo among a bunch of crazy wrestling fans. That feels achievable, albeit a little odd. So I've got my stepson on red alert, and we might try and do one or two matches on the way into the ball. Who knows? But, I think your publication has covered this event brilliantly and have added context to how big it is. I still think outside of the West Australian, not many people realise what a major sporting and entertainment event this is coming to town. This is not a house show. This is not even a weekday TV show. This is one of their marquee. This is a major in the world of wrestling. This is a pay-per-view. This is one of only six or seven a year. It's the one that leads into WrestleMania. I can't remember the last time I did one outside of the United States. There might have been one in London along the way, but even the shows in Abu Dhabi, which are paid for through tens of millions of dollars, are not part of the pay-per-view cycle. This is part of this is the Elimination Chamber. This is big, and it's in Perth, and it's going back into. So for our city, well, I might say the word "our" for a moment, even though I proclaim to be a small part of the sporting cycle. But if I can say our city, Perth. It's unbelievable for Perth that an event this size comes to town, and I think it's hats off to the government and to Venues Live and to everyone else involved who've got great appetite to keep growing sport and entertainment in the state.
It's funny you say you're going to try and get there for the start. I was talking to Michael Walters at the Perth Lynx game the other day, and he was trying to work out how he could play in the Fremantle versus West Coast scratch match, get from Mineral Resources Park to Optus Stadium to still see something. And you mentioned the coverage we've had. The WWE have been great working with us, and we've had Rhea Ripley and Dominic Mysterio and Grayson Waller and LA Knight and most recently Indy Hartwell as part of the series. So it's been good fun so far. So but back on to basketball just to finish. Like, the NBL's going going really well. My query around the NBL at the moment is, from a scheduling perspective, the fact that when they released their schedule, the AFL hadn't released theirs, and now the final series is going to heavily clash with the opening rounds of the AFL season. The grand final is going to probably be about round two or three. Are you concerned at all that it's not going to get the exposure that it warrants and deserves because it's been of everything else coming forward?
Not in Perth, because we're the biggest show in town in Perth. So that's, I'm only saying that tongue in cheek, but I think it's, it's not an easy solve. Well, first of all, basketball is such a brilliant product and March is such a great time of the year to go to sport. Like, summer's starting to end, you know, here in Victoria, for instance, the Grand Prix is on at the same time and that coexists beautifully. And so, like, the short answer is no, but I do have empathy for them on the scheduling, because the FIBA window happens around the same time. That's got to be conquered as well. Then you've got the play-ins, which is only in year two. But, you know, year one was incredible. I think everyone would acknowledge that. And it's how good's it been to keep the season alive down to really the last spot for everybody. So it's not an easy fixture to do. And, yeah, it will ease into March, most probably into, you know, probably 3 weeks of March. But this is the NBL Finals. These are the best teams in the country. This is going to be the most hotly contested final series. All six teams can win it. Probably most of those six have beaten each other at some stage. Quality of basketball has never been faster, quicker. The crowds have been awesome. The most venues have been at capacity or near capacity all summer. The TV ratings have had significant uplift for ESPN and KO in particular. And it's just an exciting time in sport and overlapping. And I think the start of the AFL NRL seasons and also the AFL finals, I've been an advocate of getting into September and trying to play in September as well. You know, they're really great times for sports fans where your excitement levels are high, you want to consume and be around, and the start and end of the summer are fantastic. I'd be an advocate for having games in September in the future. So, yeah, it's cool. And I think it'll get the attention it deserves.
Could be, we have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday sort of finals. It's Sunday footy over here. There's a lot of Wildcats fans who are footy fans as well. Would you be trying to make sure that the way it falls for wherever your fixture is, that it can be home games, not at the same time as footy over here, given we know when those footy games are being played? It's different to Melbourne where there's games every single day. Would you like to see them try to avoid a clash for your fans?
I think, Vince and Sean at the NBL and under David's leadership, and with Larry, they do an amazing job, and they have great feel for, you know, the fan. Like, it's a fan-centric league, I'm sure, and I trust that they'll take into full account, you know, West Coast Fremantle when they're playing and how, and they'll factor and schedule accordingly. You know, it's no secret when our fans like to go to the games, and, I think the higher you finish on the ladder, probably the better chance you have of being slotted in somewhere that suits you. I think I have full confidence that we'll be, you know, scheduled in the appropriate way. Whether we play in, if we finish second, the minimum we'll play is two finals, and the maximum probably is eight. And of those two, the minimum is one at home, and the maximum is probably five, or it might be, or similar. So, I'm confident that there's a lot of dates on hold, and I'm confident that that'll work out.
Oh, look, thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, as I said, it's been a big day for you personally, and you've got a bit going on with the Super Bowl, trying to get there next week and everything else. So we always appreciate your time. You've been very giving as an owner, and happy to talk about things whenever it's come up. So really appreciate you coming on the Dribble Podcast.
Thank you. And again, I do want to acknowledge your timing rather than mine. So apologies, I can't go into the depth of detail that we will a little bit later into February. And just a shout out to the Red Army and the public who've just been incredible this summer, and how they've embraced the team in particular, which is all that matters, and how supportive they've been. I know it's been just wonderfully well received by the players and the coaches. And that's the most important thing. But as us as owners and our business and how they've supported us, we really appreciate it. And, you know, hopefully we can deliver on our promise to give this everything, and let's go try and get this thing, eh?
Exactly.
Well, let's go, Cats.
Go, Cats. It's a good way to finish. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Craig, and thanks for your coverage of the sport. It's impeccable.
Thanks to Hutchie there. Now, as we mentioned during that recording, that was done on Thursday, and it was only a short amount of time after news had broken that there had been three new owners added to the ownership team. At that point, we hadn't clarified or verified those names, so I wasn't prepared to mention them during that interview, but less than half an hour after, we were able to clarify those names, and you would have already seen them both at thewest.com.au and in The West Australian. So, Jodie Milhan has bought in with $100,000 of that $1.5 million that was organised. Bill Bloke, he's a WA businessman from the resources sector. He's in for $400,000. And then we have David Olcaro, who is based in the US. He's an Aussie as part of a big media team over there. Has a strong media career, and you would hear him on SEN as well. So he's in for $1 million. So there's significant changes there to the ownership team. I'm not as concerned about it as a lot of people are. I think they bought the Wildcats for $8.5 million. If you can then reinvest some of that, I don't see a real problem with it, considering other clubs have people with multiple owners as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens here from an overall SEN perspective, but from a Wildcats perspective, I don't think there's too many things that anyone should really be concerned about with this sale or this movement of shares. I think it just makes business sense to add as many new voices as you can and get as much money into the company as possible. Well, there aren't many athletes who are talented enough to have the option of sporting careers across multiple codes, but my next guest is one of those. Rosie Deegan was one of the first players signed by the West Coast Eagles for their AFLW team way back in 2019 after starring at under 18 level. She's also an elite basketballer, having already donned the green and gold at junior level as well. Deegan will soon graduate from Davidson College in the US, but as with all sporting stories, there is a twist in this tale. I'm pleased to say that Rosie has joined us from North Carolina. Rosie Deegan, welcome to the Dribble Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Pleasure to be here.
Now, let's start with the twist. It's about a month ago. What happened to your knee?
Yeah, so was in a game doing what would seem like a normal layup, kind of stereotypical story, and have well and truly blown out my ACL. So just got surgery about a week ago. So that's the brilliant twist that I'm dealing with right now.
Could you believe it? Like, towards the end of your college career, everything's gone so well for you for so long, and then a basic action ends up with a majorly serious injury.
Yeah, it was pretty devastating at the time, obviously. Like, I'm a month out, so you get to process things a little bit. But I think the thing, and it's like with ACLs as well, it's really tough with the injury where you don't know what you kind of did wrong or, like, how to prevent it. Like, I've done an ankle in the past. I'm like, oh, I was probably, like, I did, like, a stupid layup. You know, I was a bit reckless with my body. I put it in this, like, position where I was going to land on things. But the ACL, just, like, it was just on a left-right layup. So, I mean, at the end of the day, there's nothing I can really do to change it. And it's moving forward now. But it was a pretty unfortunate, pretty terrible timing, if I can say, truly, going into a pro career. But we'll get past it, hopefully.
Did you know straight away? Like, some people say they think, oh, I've just done something minor here. Others say, no, they knew that they'd ruptured it straight away. What was the feeling like for you?
Practically, I just immediately knew. Because I've heard about it before, and a couple of my teammates have actually done their ACLs, and, like, my best mates in the team. And they talked about, like, that sickening feeling of, like, no stability. And it's just, I pretty much, like, was just going, as soon as I tried to take off on my right foot for the layup, and it just felt like my knee, like, just didn't exist anymore. So it kind of, like, went back and forth, and I'd, like, collapse. I did the classic, like, double knee clench as well, which, like, my trainer had, like, always talked to me. He's like, oh, as soon as someone grabs their knee with two hands, like, they've done their ACL. And so I'm, like, looking down at my leg as I've got two knee, like, hands on my knee. I'm like, oh, I'm one of those people. So it was tough. And my parents were visiting as well. So I really done them in. They haven't visited in like a couple of years, and they were coming to watch me play. They're flying out the next day, and so it was the last game they were going to catch. And in the start of the fourth, it happened. And they're like, I looked up in the crowd, and I was like, and so I think they kind of knew as well.
You're flying as well. Like, your form had been amazing. You had some massive games. You're the player of the week in your conference only a month earlier. Like, did you feel like you were at the peak of your powers at that point?
Yeah, I think that's the really upsetting thing. I think I decided to take my fifth year at Davidson because I knew that coming off my senior year, I had a space to grow. And, like, I knew Davidson was kind of the program that was kind of sent me and, like, helped me in that direction. Like, it's a program I was familiar with. Like, instead of transferring, like some people do with their fifth year, I was like, I'm going to take it here. I know the system. I know we have a really good team. Like, our team was almost ranked. We were receiving votes. Like, we beat Duke. Like, we were flying. We're on top of the world. And we get into conference, and then this kind of happens, you know? So it's pretty terrible timing. I'm keeping a positive outlook on it, but it's probably the worst timing to have done it, but what can you really do?
And you just had the surgery, so how's the pain levels now? How's your mobility even just around the house?
My mobility, yeah. Well, I was saying this. I didn't realise, like, I had a couple mates do ACLs, and obviously AFLW has quite high ACL rates. I didn't realise how, like, debilitating it was. I've been doing, like, rehab and just trying to tense my quad, and I'm just confused why my quad is just not working, given my knee. So I'm learning a lot more. I'm on crutches, so I'm a little bit dependent on people. But I took my first steps today, so watch out. I'm on the road back. I'm a week in, so watch out. The basketball community should be scared. You know, the returns... The returns come.
You look positive at least, which is the most important. Like, as you said, it's done. So what's done? And you have had significant injury in the past. Like, the last time we were chatting was 2020, and you just blown out your ankle. You had a syndesmosis injury whilst training with the West Coast Eagles. So you've had a few big ones, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I think the ACL is just a scary one, just because, you know, you don't know how you're going to come back. But I think I have a lot of confidence in my ankle and the way I came back from that. I think there's some people who have natural basketball ability, and there's some people who really have to work hard. I think I kind of sit in between. I mean, I don't have the natural aesthetics of basketball, but I do think I have quite a natural feel for the game. So I kind of back myself in that feel won't go away. So just got to get my knee right and my body right. But the way, like, I see the game and view the game should probably stay the same. So at least that's what I'm hoping on.
That's all you can hope for in sport, that everything comes back. So you were at the stage where you were finishing up your college career, which meant that it was decision time around choosing sports. Had you made a call on what you were going to do, whether you were going to chase basketball ever overseas or in WNBL, or whether you're going to come and try to play for West Coast, or whether you're going to be one of those players like Mon Conti who tries to combine both?
I think it's really interesting. Like, I've always tried to combine both, and I've always, like, I mean, like, when I was home, and you know, in that, like, you talked to me in, like, 2020, I was trying in that stage of, like, trying to talk to West Coast and talk to, like, Perth Lynx and try, you know, but I think it's just really hard to kind of be that dual athlete just with how women's professional sport's going. Like, it's very legitimate. Like, Perth Lynx or WNBL is a very legitimate league that deserves, like, all your attention, and so is the AFLW now. And so I think as, like, women's sport grows and becomes less amateur as it was in the past, like, dual athletes are going to have to make a decision. I think I'm kind of finding myself in that position now of which path is best for me moving forward and, like, to pursue my goals and what my goals really are and whether they're pivoted with this injury.
Had you made a call pre-injury on what you were going to do, or have you had to change your mind because of this injury?
It's interesting. I think for me, I kind of always... Well, obviously, I've been at college playing basketball for 4 years, so I've put basketball first. And I think a lot was, and it's funny now because I'm injured, but a lot was riding on this year with, like, going to WNBA camps, like prospects in Europe and stuff like that. In that sense, I was still chasing the basketball dream. This injury, I don't think it's going to stop me from chasing my basketball dream. It's just going to postpone it. But then it does put a thing in, like, an idea in my head is, like, the ACL incident rates in AFLW is extremely high. So then, like, that's in the back of my mind, like, oh, I don't want to go through this again. So I'm not too sure. I've always prioritized basketball. My mom wishes that's going to switch because she wants me home and playing for West Coast Eagles. And I wish I could do both, but I don't really want to give up on my Olympics dream, I think. Maybe I'm just being a little kid, but I don't want to give up on that just yet.
Olympics is everyone's dream. Let's face it, they're playing basketball. Yeah. So be safe to say basketball's your choice. And football's now number two?
Probably right now, I'd still say. I'm still on that trajectory. Just can't quite... I think that's the thing as well with basketball. I think there's an opportunity for me to travel around the world while I'm young and like, use basketball as a forum to meet people and see and have new experiences. Whereas as amazing as football is, it is Australia. And I love Australia, but I think it's pretty cool at a young age to meet different people, play in different countries, live in countries where they don't speak my language, I think like that probably will grow me more as a person than staying in Perth and playing for the West Coast Eagles.
Davidson has helped you to grow your life dramatically, hasn't it? Tell us about the experience both on and off the court.
Yeah, so Davidson College was amazing. I remember when they reached out, like, all like, let's be real, we all know it because of Steph Curry. So I was just like, I love the bragging rights of being like, oh yeah, no, Steph Curry's school. But apart from that, it's a pretty small school, 2,000 kids. But just a great community feel. So that was one of the reasons I came. And then the academics are like really good, especially in America. They're pretty high caliber. And so it was just like a perfect balance. And as a community, like I'm from Perth. We know Perth, everybody knows everybody. So that's where I kind of felt like in Davidson. I'm actually recording this from my host family's house. So they give you like, if you're international, you get a host family. And so I've known those guys for 4 years now. Like they're my family, pretty much they've taken care of me. So I think like this experience has been amazing. And that's just off the court. And then I got to grow and play basketball. I had a really good freshman year. Got to grow and become a leader and improve my games in ways that's not just scoring the basketball, which was prioritized so much in juniors. I think I'm like a way better player now than I ever was my freshman year or when I was playing back in Australia. So I owe Davidson my career, and hopefully, you know, everything I do in the future is a result of what they gave me and how they trained me here. So I'm very appreciative to them.
So where are you better, and what are some of those highlights that you've experienced on the court?
Yeah, I mean, where am I better? I don't know if you watched me play. I was pretty terrible defensively. I feel like any offensive player kind of says that, right? It's like, I thought I just worked on one end, took a rest on the other, and then caught the ball and shot it again on the other end. So I think Davidson and college basketball schemes, like you can't really take plays off. So I think defensively I've gone much better. I think, once again, passing. So maybe the only thing I was good at was probably being a ball hog back in the day. So they've taught me a lot. They've taught me how to be a good teammate. They've taught me how to be a good leader. And they've given me the opportunities to be that for people. And I think all around I'm just a much higher IQ basketball player than I was. And I probably don't have as much value in just points anymore, which I think is pretty important for basketball, especially playing good team basketball.
A lot of the things that are talked about you revolve around your eye and the fact that you can only see out of one of them. Now, peripheral vision's pretty damn important in sport.
Yeah.
Growing up, I would imagine that you just had to do what you needed to do just to get by on the court and then figure out where people were coming from on your left-hand side because you couldn't see anything anyway. Like, so
yeah.
Has that been a challenge for developing your game and being a rounded person? Because without the ball in your hands, I'd imagine it'd be really difficult to know where the game's heading at different points.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been a challenge. It's interesting because like when I was younger, I obviously had my weird shot technique that every coach tried to change because it's terrible and it looks terrible. And I just like couldn't change it, and it wasn't. But then, like a lot of kids, like refused to change their shot. So I just thought I was one of them. When I'm like, doesn't feel comfortable. And then I was like 13. Obviously, got the eye diagnosis, and I was like, oh, yay, a great excuse for me not to change my shot. So practically, just got stuck with that, and I guess I had to adapt. But the thing is, and a lot of people like to ask me. I was like, I don't feel like it was that much of a disadvantage because I'd grown up with it. So I just never saw the left side, so I grew up playing basketball, never seeing the left side, so whatever I did just was to compensate for that, and I didn't really realise. It'd be different if I got like stabbed in the eye at the age of 15 and had to, you know, adapt. I'd respect that kid a lot more than me. But I've got hit by a lot of screens on the left side. I got tackled on the left side a lot in football. A couple holding the balls coming from an unknown defender on the left. But I don't know, except for some hard hits. It hasn't hindered me too much yet, which is good.
So are you totally blind in that eye, or have you got any vision, or is it just black?
Nah, so what it was is not actually my eye, and that's kind of why like I look relatively okay in terms of like my eye kind of tracks and stuff like that. So it's my brain just doesn't receive the signal. So the neural pathways in my brain when I was younger just got disrupted. So practically I see, nothing. So it's not working.
Amazing.
It looks okay, but it's not working at all. So,
and from a choosing sports perspective, I would have thought the fact that you can get tackled and get hurt, if you're not tensing for a tackle in footy, then you're going to get hurt more often than not.
Yeah.
So that would have been a real challenge. As AFLW is a lot quicker than what it was when you were last in Australia. And the athleticism and the strength of players is so much different as well. So what you were doing at under 18 level when you're an All-Australian is different to what you'd be facing now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the game's come so far, I think. And that's why I'm like absolutely flattered when teams like West Coast Eagles and stuff like that will still have me. Because I'm like, the game's come so far and improved so much. And, you know, if I got an ounce of talent on, like, still in my system, I'd love to use it and I'd love to play the game, because I think football is obviously... I brag about it when I'm over here, because I don't think Americans quite comprehend the art that is AFL. But, yeah, I think the game's come a long way, so who knows? Maybe I step out in the Eagles jersey and it's all hyped up and then I get drilled from the left side. I mean, I could see it happening. It'll be a humbling moment for sure, but it'll be funny.
Everyone go, left side, left side.
There she goes. Yeah.
What's the next couple of months entail for you from a recovery standpoint and coming home or staying there? Like, how will you deal with the next few months now that you're not playing anymore, but you've got to work on rehab?
Yeah, exactly. So I'll probably look to sign with an agency to kind of represent me moving forward. I've got the next 3 months here. They'll really kind of tie down just like with Davidson's rehabilitation. The athlete trains there are spectacular. They've looked after me. Obviously, through my ankle, they've really taken care of me. So I have a lot of trust in them to get me back to 100%. So I'll probably do that for the first 4 months and then look to probably finish my rehab in Australia. Kind of looking to play again, kind of reintegrate into like WNBL, NBL 1 while I'm back, and just really get stronger. And I guess that's kind of like my plan in the future, is just kind of build back from this. I think, you know, you hope you come back better, but obviously ACL is a bit of a damage. So hopefully I can do that. But my next 3 months is pretty set. I'll be here in America, kind of working as hard as I can to get my mobility back and stuff like that. And then it's kind of up in the air from where I take the rest of my rehabilitation for the next 6 months.
Yeah, so we do hear a year is often mentioned as the timeline. What are you being told in terms of what's likely for you, for how long you'd be out for? Again, it was January 11, I think it was, perspective when you got hurt. Yeah.
They're probably thinking, they ballpark between 9 and 12 months. Probably 12 months until I'm playing like professional level basketball. I'll probably start getting back into like individual training and contact during like 9 to 10 is what they're kind of estimating right now. So I think hopefully within that, I can sign with a club that will take me on that like last 3 months journey, and they can train me at the same time, because I'll be fully active. It's just more, you just don't want to rush back into like fully playing a game and gain like speed. So that's probably what I'll look to do with the injury. Hopefully I've had a good enough career so far that people can see value in me. Hopefully, you know, we don't know. But that's hopefully what will happen. And if not, I'll probably come home and try to build up my profile again to get more offers and stuff like that. So
you were a WNBL, was it a development player or a training player with Perth Lynx? That was the official title.
I think training player. I never signed with them because I was still in. I wasn't allowed to do eligibility with college. So yeah.
You were training with them for half a season, was my memory, and you had some contact with them at different points when you were going back to Davidson about whether you'd sign with them or go through college. They've obviously got the bye this week. The entire competition, WNBL, has a bye this week due to the international window. But how much contact had you had with WNBL clubs maybe in the past couple of months as you were coming towards the end of Davidson?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting with that, and NCAA, I think it gets a bit wishy-washy with like agency and reaching out to players and stuff like that. So when I signed, like obviously you stay in contact with people, particularly like NBL clubs, because that's the season I was going to be back for first before WNBL. So I had a lot of NBL clubs reaching out, but obviously I wasn't allowed to respond or talk back to them just because I was in season and still being NCAA and kind of held by the rules of the NCAA. But obviously, as I said, I'm free now from injury, so it's not the most positive, but I'm free now to kind of reach out and sign with an actual professional agency to represent me and then kind of get into talkings with people. But my hope was not to go back and play WNBL just yet, and probably just explore my Europe options just while I'm young, and just kind of explore like how far up I can get in like Europe basketball and then WNBA from there. I think the Australian league's insanely good, but I just wanted to kind of travel when I was young, was kind of the plan.
Get the experience where you can.
Exactly. I'm like playing different systems and stuff like that. I think it's good for me.
What did you study when you're, what was your major in college?
So as everybody, I started off as pre-med because I thought, you know, being a doctor and a professional athlete was an easy combo that I could take on, which I was very, my ego was very humbled in the first freshman year as I almost drowned in the student athlete load. Davidson's very good at treating their athletes exactly like every other student, which is a gift and a curse sometimes. So drowned on that one, pulled out of the pre-med. But then I ended up with a psychology degree and a public health degree as well. So I majored in both those just, you know, on the off chance, kind of after basketball. You know, they always say you're one injury away. Here I am. luckily I got a degree, huh?
Absolutely. And it's a bit weird seeing, so you're in a jumper. We're getting 40 degrees at the moment this week. How much snow are you under over there at the moment?
No, see, we're all right here in like Davidson. Like Davidson's North Carolina, so they get the four seasons. Like I haven't seen snow here in like 3 years, so we don't get it like that. But like my brother was telling me Perth's like, what, 43 today?
Yeah, stupid. That's insane. No,
but it's like, it's almost, and I'm Perth's biggest fan, but it's almost too hot. Like it's uncomfortable. Like you're not having a good time. Like my brother's waking up and it's like 35.
Yeah, it's been a bit random. That's for sure. It's good to hear your voice. Good to see your face. Good to know that you've got over the disappointment so far of what was such a devastating injury. So we hope things go really well for you with your recovery and that your basketball career can go from strength to strength here once you get back. So thank you very much for joining us on the Dribble Podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, guys.
So that's it for this week's episode of the Dribble Podcast. Thanks to Craig Hutchison and Rosie Deegan for their time. Thanks to Josh Cable and Alex Smith for their production work. You can read all of your basketball news in the West Australian newspaper and at thewest.com.au. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Dribble Podcast.